One way to reduce energy costs at the Defense Department is to simply cut back on the military's use of fuel. Pentagon says it's making a $9 billion investment over the next 5 years to minimize how much diesel and jet fuel it needs for combat operations. But DoD's consumption is still expected to rise over the next half decade because of new energy-hungry technologies like the F-35 and the Littoral Combat Ship. Sharon Burke is a senior fellow for the International Security Program at the New America Foundation. She's also former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Operational Energy Plans and Programs. In a recent article for Foreign Affairs, she argues DoD's energy appetite isn't just a budget concern. It's increasingly going to challenge the military's ability to perform its missions. Ms. Burke joins us now. Very, very glad you could join us. Thanks very much for coming on.
Delighted to be with you.
Let's begin there with that mission-centric view. You suggest in your article that in the future, this heavy reliance on liquid fuels is going to be even more of a, I guess I'll say, potential liability than it is right now. Why is that in your view?
Well, energy is an input just like any other input. You know, you need spare parts, you need food for your forces, you need all of that. But in some ways, it's not like anything else because every single system requires some kind of steady, reliable, and constant supply of energy for the system to function. And not only that, but this is an input that has a lot of volume and a lot of weight and has its own geopolitical context because, of course, there's lots of people competing for fuel. It's coming from conflicted places at times. And so you're putting a big supply line down that has its own geopolitical context, and we're talking about an away game where we're going to be supporting missions that are farther and farther away from home. So all of a sudden, this input that you need, that you have to have constantly every day, that you have to send long distances, and that in itself has geopolitical connotations, that's a problem already, and it's going to be a problem in the future that's of greater concern.
As you say, it's been noted by several people that one of the most dangerous places to be in Afghanistan is in a fuel convoy. So, and as you alluded to, that's a problem that's been with us for a long time. Does it get worse as the nature of warfare and the kinds of things the military can be foreseen to be doing in the next couple decades changes?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, the most dangerous place to be in Afghanistan is actually on route clearance on foot. But but a lot of times the point being that, what are they clearing the routes for?
Right.
Well, the Army says something like 70% of their convoys are moving fuel and water. So, you know, one way or another, it's probably related to those movements. So it's already a problem when you're facing a foe that's not particularly well equipped. You talk about a future where we may be facing adversaries who have precision weapons that are capable of targeting supply lines very precisely. You know, a very logical question to ask is, why would they target your up-armored combatants when they can target your supply lines and have the same effect? And, you know, a lot of times in the past, in the recent past, when you've looked at military war games, sometimes they don't play those kinds of dynamics, right? The logistics are off the table. Well, they won't be off the table in real life and in the future. So I think we need to have an honest look at what are the risks and the vulnerabilities and the strengths and what can we do about it.
Yeah, let's go to that next question. What can we do about it? I mentioned the $9 billion investment the department's making over the next 5 years. What sorts of things would you imagine that funding going toward?
Well, most of that funding, and when I left, that's how much they were looking at. Most of it was going towards efficiency improvements or performance improvements. So you're talking about in propulsion systems and engines for the most part. So very practical, very brass tacks kinds of improvements. But I think, you know, the energy footprint of U.S. military forces is the problem the way we're describing it in its own right. But it's also an indicator that we've got a very heavy force. And so it's sort of a red flag for a bigger problem about how are you going to project and sustain a force that's got that much demand. So you can make improvements to a propulsion system or to an engine, and that'll shrink your energy demand a little bit, and that certainly helps. But at the end of the day, you got to look at a more fundamental question about what kind of force we have, what kind of force we're projecting, how we're projecting it, where we're putting it. All of those questions also have to be on the table. And it's not so much that I'm saying that the energy tail has to wag the defense dog. But it's a question is that if you're really heavy in your energy consumption and you're talking about sending a force all the way around the world, you probably have a force that's too heavy for the mission and for the future we're looking at to begin with. So it's all of those things together. You got to look at a different kind of force and a different kind of future.
During your time in office, I'm sure that you went to more than one hearing where you were asked the question, why is DOD spending all this money and all this energy stuff? That's what we have the Department of Energy for. What's the appropriate answer to that question, do you think?
Well, DOD is spending most of the money, the investment that DOD has in energy is for DOD-specific, for military-specific technologies and missions and capabilities. So you wouldn't expect DOE to be, you know, looking at how can you improve the energy performance of an Abrams tank. It's just not what they're for. So the vast majority of the DOD investments in this area are for very specific military capabilities. So it's sort of a red herring of a question. That's not what DOD is putting their money in. But what they are putting a lot more money in is to the actual fuel bill. Now, so $9 billion over 5 years, but the fuel bill is $16 billion a year.
Right.
So that's where the real money is.
And again, back to your time in office, it's not as though DOD is just starting down this path of trying to become more energy aware and find ways to save energy. What are the things that you're most proud of that the military service has pulled off in terms of either demand reduction or other important technologies?
Well, I think what I'm most proud of is, you know, when I came in, Secretary Gates at the time was the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, and he made it clear that for all of us, if we had a role to play in supporting deployed forces, that was our most important job. And I took that to heart, and we looked at what our office could do to support deployed forces. And we found a lot of great partners in the Marine Corps and in the Army in particular, at looking at how could we lighten the footprint for forces that were deployed in Afghanistan. So what I'm proudest of is the changes that were made, both in tactics and procedures and processes, but also some of the technologies. And some of them were kind of exciting, like hybrid solar generation of power. And some of them were just really pretty common sense, like just fix the generators. But that full range of things, people really worked hard to see how you could make that a lighter footprint and better support forces. And I'm certainly proudest of that.
And I guess people just kind of come up with innovative ideas in all sorts of areas once you start making energy a priority and something that everyone's supposed to be thinking about all the time.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, everybody's got great ideas, but a great idea in the military context has to be very specific to the military.
Hmm.
You know, it has to be able to perform for military missions and the circumstances. So that was always, you know, we would talk to a lot of innovators. Like you said, lots of people had great ideas, and that was always very exciting. But then when you would say, yeah, but that's going to break if a soldier uses it, you know, that it was always an interesting balance to try to figure out how to walk that line between good innovation and good innovation for a military use.